views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Voices of Women is a talk radio show that gives voice to the personal stories of women. It will inspire women and enlighten men to follow their dreams and create positive changes in their lives. Whether the audience listens to best-selling authors or a layperson like themselves, they'll realize there are others with similar experiences and feelings to their own. This show will give women tools they can use every day, which will empower them to step out of their boxes and create the changes they desire in their life. Chris inspires women to find their voices, speak up, and become leaders of their own life. Everyone has their gifts to share with the world, and it's time for women to work together to bring honor and respect to the feminine voice, which is within all people, men and women. Topics include personal growth, spirituality, creativity, leadership, and divine feminine. Now here's your host, Chris Stainis.
Welcome to Voices of Women. I'm Chris Stainis. And today I have a special interview. I'm very excited. It's an acquaintance I've known for many years through Woman of Wisdom, Sonia Lee, excuse me, who's written an amazing memoir of her journey with her husband, who had a rare appendix cancer and experienced the aftermath of brain injury from the surgery. They've been married 23 years when this brain injury resulted in his not remembering who he was. In their book, Wondering Who You Are, she takes you through their journey of discovery, who they would become when there's no past relationship to build from. Woven into the story is their pre-cancer story, showing us the before and after and the depth of their relationship. So I read this book in two sittings. It would have been one, but it was just got too late at night. So it's a very honest and intimate portrayal of a relationship of grief, love, sexuality, and self-examination of who you are in the world. One that most people probably wouldn't be able to write with so much candor, except Sonia, a gifted writer who's courageous and bold to do this. Gutsy, I'd say. It's a book not only about survival of cancer, brain injury, and marriage, but about what is the nature of personality and how to be courageous in the face of trauma. Sonia's been awarded an International Memoir Prize for the story, also won an Artist Trust Award. In July, her memoir was named a top 10 book by the BBC, received a starred review by Booklist, and was a book of the week at Word Bookstores. Her websites are, you can find everything about her book at wonderingwhoyouare.com. So welcome, Sonia.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris. It's great to be here with you.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit. You know, one thing I'm curious about is why you wrote the memoir, why it's an important story to tell.
Excuse me. Well, initially, I wrote the memoir because I had to. It was kind of a method of survival, of understanding the trauma, of making meaning from it, and really just trying to sleuth my way through the details that were happening with Richard at that time. But after a while, after I had many drafts of it down and got some distance from it, I realized that I was also writing it for other caregivers, other cancer survivors, other survivors of TBI, people who might not be able to say what they needed to say about their experiences, but which, you know, since I put my essays out into the world ongoingly, that I was starting to hear from and hear things that they couldn't quite be candid about. So I was really lucky because the nature of Richard's brain injury, which we'll talk about soon, but according to the nature of his brain injury, he didn't really have a lot of the same desire for proprietary, private ways of being in the world any longer. He felt like he didn't have any reputation to manage, he said. And so I was able to write those things that I felt more strongly about without really editing myself or letting my critic get too active.
Yeah, that's amazing, because I think for most people that critic would go, how could I write this?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, it is what I teach, too. I have a chance, now that I've written the book, to teach trauma survivors writing. And I also teach veterans, women veterans, and service members writing. And many of those veterans have had both combat trauma and military sexual trauma. And it's a way to really help them know that one can be vulnerable with one story and still survive it. That certainly there are consequences for being intimate to larger groups of people, but that compared to the other options sometimes, which is holding a secret or holding the trauma for to oneself, it's remarkably healing to do through the narrative, to do through understanding how to tell one story.
Oh yeah, I really believe in holding it to yourself. Just holds off you in that guilt and shame and whatever feelings that you have. The sharing of a story can release, you know, and free people from that. I find it very liberating to be sharing your story.
Thank you.
Well, tell us a little bit about the collaboration. You know, because it wasn't. I mean, your name's on the book, but it really was written by the two of you.
Right. You know, so Richard had this rare cancer called pseudomyxoma peritonei, and he had two different surgeries for it. The first was in the year 2000, and the second was in the year 2003. And it was the second surgery that was the kind of wake-up call for his life. He knew that he was going to have this extraordinary surgery. He knew that he was going to need the heated intraperitoneal chemotherapy, sometimes called HIPEC, for that, in order to survive, to live a lot of years. And so he chose that, and I supported him in choosing that. But in the process, you know, he had something called an anoxic insult, and that is when one loses oxygen during blood loss following a surgical treatment. Is when it happened to him when he was in ICU. So, you know, I knew that he had a full-out loss of most of our life. He couldn't remember, for example, his childhood. He couldn't remember the day we got married, the days of our children's birth. He actually, in the hospital, couldn't source what he did for a career or where we lived. So something in that anoxic insult had gone out and caused a long-term loss, a loss of his long-term memory, as well as short-term memory loss. So initially, he had something called aphasia as well. In him, it appeared as he could understand language, but he couldn't make language for himself. So I was just trying to help him know what his place was in the world initially. So for the first few years, it was really all about the collaboration, was both of us trying to survive. And in me, that looked like keeping notes in my journal and getting him to treatments, and then eventually Richard finding his way back to his life as a healer. But after that time, after I knew that I was going to write a book, which was some years into it, I didn't ever make the assumption that Richard didn't know things that I might not know. So we would sit together, usually on a Saturday morning, and we would take a writing prompt, and he would go off to his man cave and write, you know, his answer to whatever that question was. And then we'd get back together and read it to each other, and usually just have, you know, these big tears because we were seeing things in this way for the first time. And what that ended up in me learning was that he did have certain parts of his life that were returning to him, and it was material that I didn't know about. So, for example, when I asked him, what's the first memory that you have in the hospital? It was 2 weeks into the hospital stay. He's walking down the hall with the IV pole, and he looks down and sees me. Now, had I not entered into that kind of conversation with him around the writing of the book, he really wouldn't have, I wouldn't have known those things, and he wouldn't have had a chance to be in it. So I am the narrator of the book. My name is on the cover of it, but his dialogue and his story and all of those things are a huge part of what the book is about.
Yes, and it is great to have those two perspectives. Like, you know, and our memories are so funny because, you know, like my husband and I traveled around the world, and he'll tell stories, and I have to go, did that happen?
Yes.
You know, we all remember different things, and I have to go back in my memory and go, oh, okay, yeah. And I'll remember things that he doesn't remember. So that's even normal in our brain function. Well, how, because you talked about this, you know, what was your experience being at the hospital and seeing your husband when he comes out of surgery wakes up from that to not know you?
Well, there was a great deal of confusion at that time, as you can imagine. And, you know, one of the things that caused a problem is that we didn't know until it came time very close to leaving the hospital that anyone thought that he had an anoxic insult. So he was sitting in bed. His eyes were really wide. He had 13 tubes running in and out of his body. The first few days, he's just trying to survive. It's such an extensive surgery. I mean, it cuts you from heart to pubis, opens up your whole body. It's a mucus-producing kind of cancer. So you have to get every single one of your organs scraped, and then it puts this heated chemotherapy into the body cavity. It's the standard of care for this kind of cancer, and it's pretty much the only way that people can survive. It's the only curative form of the cancer.
Well, and we're gonna take a break right now. We'll come back to your story. This is Sis Famous on Voices of Women, and we'll come back and talk more with Sonia Lee.
Give me one reason to stay. Won't I turn right back around? Give me one reason to stay.
Dr. Linda Salvin,
metaphysical master,
now bringing insight and metaphysical abundance to your living room
with her spirit-filled candle line, Wicks of Wisdom.
Dr. Linda's unique formulations of pure and powerful herbs, oils, and essences can assist you in love, luck, finances, health, and more.
Wait till you experience the power of Wicks of Wisdom.
Find out how these amazing candles can help you. See them now and order yours at lindasalvin.com.
Or call 888-509-1077.
This is Lynn Brown from the show Winning at the Game of Life. Listen, it's time to enrich your money stories and open your path to all that you desire. We all have limiting beliefs which we accumulate from our life experiences, ancestors, and past lives. These beliefs block our ability to receive the unlimited flow of abundance that the universe is constantly offering to us. Why are we so emotionally caught up on the word money? It's only one of the many forms of abundance. I'm excited to uncover your unique stories and limiting beliefs around money and abundance, as well as give you tools to release them from your space. It's time to invest in yourself. You deserve everything you ever imagined and more. Call me to schedule a reading at 844-B-INTUIT or RUINTUIT.com.
Lynn was very accurate, and she was so clear in explaining everything to me. I highly recommend Lynn to all of you.
Tired of traditional talk? People pontificating about this or that, the left or the right. Sometimes the truth is just all lost in the noise. Tune in each week to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher on TransformationTalkRadio.com, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, as nationally known guests talk about what's important to you, your life, your concerns, and your success. Tune in and turn on to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher. Visit ChuckGallagher.com for more information.
Holistic Medical Center is where you find it all. A healthy space with doctors who care, see, and listen to the whole you. Hi, this is Dr. Darvish. If you have not found an answer to your chronic symptoms, you will find answers here at Holistic Medical Center. Our doctors find the root cause of your symptoms and guide your body towards healing naturally. We transform lives from within. Visit drdarvish.com or call 425-451-0404.
'Cause I don't want to leave you lonely, but you gotta make me change my mind.
We're back on Voices of Women. I'm Chris Stanis, and I'm talking with Sonia Lee, author of Wondering Who You Are. So you were just sharing, Sonia, about the what his surgery was like. Was there anything else you wanted to add to that? And also, I was curious how, you know, for you to be in that position of realizing, oh, my God, my husband doesn't know who I am.
Right. You know, so the source of the confusions were many. Partly because he had a second emergency surgery that wasn't expected, and nobody knew if it was from that experience or from the morphine that he was on for the pain or from the chemotherapy. I mean, there were weeks while we were in the hospital where it was very clear that he couldn't speak. He didn't know his life story, his life narrative, and his personality had changed radically. I was the only person who really knew that and also had alerted my daughter to it and started to make telephone calls to other people saying, you know, something's not right here. What do I do? Who do I talk with? And finally, the surgeon heard me and ordered a neurology consult, and we kind of started to be able to take apart that something had happened that had caused this anoxic incident to occur. So with that information, it then, when we got back to where we were then living, which was in California, I was able to get him an MRI and speech therapy and start moving towards more a sense of diagnosis of what had happened to him. Still, because of our situation with our medical insurance changing, by his corporation at that time, they changed medical providers. It took us 7 months to get an evaluation from a neuropsychologist. So just during that whole time, we were trying to get him the best therapy and just scrambling to see what was happening. And it was really clear that nothing was changing. And I write in the book quite a bit about his state of innocence. During that time, he was quite a bit like a child, meaning he was very sensitive and wasn't really able to be with a lot of people and needed to be protected from stimulation. So during that time, I was just really trying to talk to as many people as possible and sort out what was happening and see if he was going to kind of come out of this cloud. And it wasn't until with a neuropsychologist that I heard the words permanent disability that I realized this is the new normal. This is not anything that I can push to change more rapidly. This is the state of affairs that we are now in.
Yes, and so that leaves you within, you kind of mentioned it, like reentry into the world. You kind of were, in the book you talk about being kind of cocooned because there was a trauma just to be able to go outside. And tell us a little bit about that and just how you brought, helped him in that reentry and getting his verbal skills back, because that was one of the real handicaps.
Mm-hmm. You know, when somebody in your life is hurting in this way this much and going through such mammoth change, it really becomes more like a maternal relationship. And, you know, the neuropsychologist and I had long discussions about, you know what, you're the one to motivate him now. You have to move into that position of being the motivator or else he won't be better. There's no way that he can survive this. So initially, he just wanted to, we called it being in the cave. He wanted to be in his bedroom all the time. He didn't want to go out. So it would be cajoling him to have 15 minutes to walk around the parking lot. Occasionally, when he got a little bit stronger, I took him into places. Like, he could sit in a movie theater for about 10 minutes and watch, you know, a few minutes of footage, and then he had to leave. Like, anything I could do to try and get him to places where more, you know, we could amp up the stimulation. And he did a lot of work with speech therapists, and we did some alternative healing at that time with something called Brain Gym, which is a kinesthetic approach to both sides of the brain communicating to each other. And, you know, most of my work with him was just about trying to get him to talk, trying to get him to exercise his language skills, because it wasn't possible for him, and it wasn't likely that it was going to happen except through motivating him to do that. So we had flashcards, we had all kinds of games and things that we played. When our son was in college at that time, and our daughter was in her final year of high school in a performing arts high school in California, and that's why we were there. But when our son would call, I would hold up cards for him, for Richard, that said, you know, how are you? How are things going for you in your life? Because he couldn't figure out what people talked about, and also the phone was just so very challenging for him. So it was a great way for him to still have connection with other people, and the kids surely needed it after a trauma like that, and nearly losing their father. But Richard also had to have all of these what's called accommodation strategies, which are containers to hold ways that he could strategize to re-enter the world.
Well, just so we get an idea, because it's 12, about 12 years now. How is he now? How is his verbal skills now? We want to have some hope here, like, you know, for people that his hope
for
change.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we did that was really interesting and is written into the book, you know, we did all of the medical things that we're required to do, but we also did a lot of travel and adventure. And what I noticed is that after these trips, when he had to negotiate a different language or a different culture or a different set of spatial skills, like driving in a foreign country, something would come back. His language skills improved quite rapidly enough that by the third year after the brain injury, he could take a job where they didn't know that he had a brain injury. So he so adamantly wanted to return to his career as a physical therapist. And one of the ways that he did that is that he studied his anatomy and physiology textbooks, but that was just going in his head and going back out. He couldn't really hold on to a lot of that information. He moved from being verbal to being kinesthetic. So as soon as he got his hands on people again, his hands could help him hold the information. So he did make it back to his career as a physical therapist, and then by the third year, he re-entered that career without anyone knowing that he had a brain injury. So he's doing quite well now, although his personality was very verbal, magnetic, charismatic, extroverted before, and now it's much more quiet, introverted, drawn to more peaceful activities like reading and being in nature. He still works with a full patient load, and most of his patients don't even know that he's a cancer survivor or a brain injury survivor. And that's because he's done so well with being able to, you know, first of all, put their needs first, because he has this really deep desire to serve others. But secondly, he has a container to hold that information with through strategies that he uses for work. So while that's relatively easy to do when things and relationships are inside a container, things that aren't in that container, like asking me for a date or remembering this story that I told him a week ago, or remembering to call one of his children, he's not naturally drawn to the spontaneous kinds of activities that we do to stay connected to people. So we've had to figure out ways to work with those too, which has been one of the interesting sides of it for me, you know?
Yeah. And it's amazing that he, you know, and you talked about that he brought back his skill of physical therapy and kinesiology, it's like, you know, the body remembers, his brain couldn't remember, but his hands knew.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And there really is something to that. We would have volunteers who would just show up at our tiny little apartment that we were living in, and he would put his hands on them and then they'd go directly to where they were hurting and know how to deal with that. I think in many ways he's a better physical therapist post-brain injury than what he was before. First of all, because he knows pain and suffering, and he knows he's had the humility of going through a huge experience like that, and I think that deeply connects him with people who are in these big transitions in his life. But also, I think there is something about working with your hands and being a kinesthetic person. It's just been amplified for him.
Yes, and that's wonderful, because it's brought him back to, you know, and it really, kudos to him for, he really persisted, you could tell in the book, he really persisted to get back to work, to reclaim his profession as a physical therapist. You know, he wasn't going to dwell in his, in the brain injury and his lack of being able to do things. He really pushed forward.
Yes, he was stubborn. He was very stubborn, and I'm so happy for that persistence.
Yes, that's great. Well, there's so much more we can talk about, and I want to get into your role, and you're wondering who you are. There's two sides of the story. So this is Chris Stanis. You're listening to Voices of Women. We'll come back and talk more with Sonia Lee.
To drop. Enlightening, humorous, and compassionate. Listen live to The Kelly Ballard Show, insight and inspiration from the great beyond. Kelly is a fourth-generation medium and intuitive who covers topics ranging from grief, spirit guides, and listening to your intuition. Kelly can help you get answers and guidance from the other side with a little bit of humor and a lot of healing. Tune in to The Kelly Ballard Show, Thursdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time here on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Chris Stanis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
What does a dentist of the year get? A little plaque. Welcome to Smile Big, where we offer cosmetic, restorative, and preventative dentistry. Dr. James Rosenwald and Dr. Susan Abdenard work hard every day for their clients to be happy to smile with the latest equipment for complete smile restoration for anyone. The sooner you call, the sooner they can help. Call 425-454-4040 or email scheduling@smilebig.com. You can even visit our website at smilebig.com.
Tune in to Sheer Alchemy with Leslie Fontaine on TransformationTalkRadio.com and get ready to stir up your passions, identify your blocks, and shift into an entirely new existence. Leslie Fontaine is a transformation catalyst and clairvoyant who uses her intuitive and energetic gifts to catapult listeners into living the life they were born to live. Whether it's shifting from scarcity to abundance, from emotional pain into joy, or from illness into health, Leslie will help you step into the true essence and power of all that you are with the help of the Ascended Masters and Archangels. You will not be the same. Visit TransformationTalkRadio.com for show dates and times, and LeslieFontaine.com to say yes to explosive abundance.
Each month, listen to Live More Radio with co-host Ali Katz. Join Ali and Dr. Pat as Ali introduces new ways to bring balance back to your life through meditation, sleep, and exercise techniques so you can live your truly authentic life. Stress less, live more. To learn more about Ali, visit livemoreradio.com.
Welcome back to Voices of Women. I'm Chris Danis, and I've been talking with Sonia Lee. She's the author of Wondering Who You Are. Hey, Sonia, can you give your contact information, you know, your websites where people can read about you and find your book and all that?
Sure. They can find me at www.wonderingwhoyouare.com, all one word. And, you know, if people want to sign up for the newsletter, they can just scroll to the bottom of that page. But I'm always posting, you know, links there. There's a beautiful reader's guide that's part of the book that book clubs might want to know about. And there's also I teach for service members and veterans, but also at Hugo House and online. So if people are interested in finding out about the kinds of things that I'm teaching, I'm happy to talk with them about that too. And then they can just send me, there's a contact form there too, so if people have questions, I'm available for readers at that website, and also I'm on Goodreads, and people can post questions to me in the Goodreads community if they happen to love that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Great. So we've been talking about what Richard's situation and what he had to struggle with and getting back to his life and all that, even though it's different because he has a different personality. I want to talk about you. There was a lot of pressure. You had a lot of pressure to hold things together. As you said, you were the caregiver and coping with that on a daily basis and the stress of that. How did you cope with going through all those feelings of, you know, here you were lived with someone for 23 years and you come back and it's a totally different person.
Yeah, you know, I really thought that I was a feminist before this. I mean, I really thought I'm empowered. I'm doing all of this. I'm taking charge in my life. But there's nothing like getting all the responsibility thrust at you really overnight for you to see. I saw all the areas that had been in the shadow, all the ways that I really had been hiding out and not stepping fully into who I am. And this gave me the opportunity to look that square in the face. It was hard. It was challenging. And I didn't know initially, honestly, Chris, if I was going to be married to a man-child, you know, to someone who was essentially at a teenage boy level for years. It took me a long time to have the kind of confidence and faith and just observation to see what was really going on with Richard instead of grieving over what I had lost. I absolutely think that anybody who has a similar experience of an identity change or someone who's losing memory, it's essential to grieve because you not only have to grieve the loss of that individual, but the loss of the relationship that you had. So I think to become empowered, to understand what has to make meaning from what is happening to you, you absolutely have to have those emotions to let go of what was and living in the past. But what I didn't know is that I was going to become so liberated by looking at this new situation straight in the face. It became so clear to me when I actually started to see this, to stare this down, that, you know, the things that I was thinking about memory and identity were really just an artifice. The whole personality thing is an artifice. It's not who we are, and it's something that is constructed. You know, I feel like I'm literally waking up every day and, you know, there's that moment before you really come to consciousness where you are free. And then, oh, okay, what do I have to do? What's going on today? Who am I? What are these things that have to be in my life? So I think that by seeing Richard so free of his identity, I was able to do that for myself. Like, wait a minute here. I've just been living out this, I need to be this kind of person. But what if I'm actually free to want what I want? What do I want? What do I care about? Can I let go enough of this narrative of who I think I am in order to see what comes in, just to see what naturally arises of its own accord. And it became this really beautiful way to live. And I think, you know, it's, first of all, I just want to say, it's not boom overnight. Like, it starts with maybe an hour where you can spend an hour trying to figure out what it is that you want. Oh, do I want, you know, a salad or macaroni and cheese for lunch? You know, I mean, it's just really simple, ordinary things. But then it eventually started to expand throughout my whole life, and I began to see what had gone on for Richard in a completely different context because I was having a different experience with my own narrative, with my own story that I had carried around. And it just, it felt really, you know, if I think of the word enlightening as a lightened version, like not holding on so tight to this shell, that's what it felt like to me.
Yeah, there's something when I'm listening to you talk about this, very freeing, and we are very much caught in our, what we've created as our identity, and the really, you know, that inward journey of, well, who am I really versus my story? You know, we all kind of cling to our stories, don't
right.
we?
Right, and the past and the and memory can really begin to hold us fast to those notions of ourselves too, and I think that's why trauma work is really important, and that's why grief is really important, and understanding that working through it, kind of going straight through it rather than all these ways that we distract ourselves and going around it, liberates one faster than, you know, than not doing those things, not articulating those things. But Richard is, you know, he, because he has short-term memory loss, there's a relative ease that goes along with that. So in other words, he may remember things and he might not remember them, but he's not waking up with guilt or shame about that. That's what, that was the extraordinary thing for me, that I was holding these standards for myself instead of really surrendering to who I am now. He is a dude who lives in the eternal now. And I saw that there was absolutely no pressure going on for him because he was doing that. And I can't turn my mind off in the same way that whatever happened to him, I can call it on one level a physiological brain injury did occur, but on another level, something quite extraordinary happened there, and I don't know what to call that. Sometimes I just call that a mind change. But in any case, he had that huge event, and he, it's just naturally the way that he is. I can't turn off my tormenting brain that likes me to have, you know, sequential narrative, or, you know, feels that there's, you know, we do this with both the past and the future, right? So it's like mm-hmm. the perfect way that we project onto the future of who we want to be. So it's constantly pulling us away from what's happening in the moment. And it's not necessary. I know it certainly is not necessary to love, because I feel more love and generosity coming from that man than at any other point in my life. And that was the, one of the huge wake-ups for me. Like, wait a minute. He doesn't have to hold on to my story or any of the ways that we have been relating to each other in order to be this kind and generous to me. So why am I thinking that that's all a required part of what a relationship is? So there was... there was moment after moment after moment of releasing who I think I am. And then also the same for our family unit, you know, whereby the children, adult children, you know, now needing to form different relationships with their father. And we started kind of jokingly calling it one brain injury after another, because by really accepting and going through the changes with ourselves that his mind change caused, then we were able to be like, oh, what can we be freed up to be here in our own lives? So it's a strange thing, Chris, for a storyteller to be married to a man who doesn't hold on to the story.
Oh, yeah, you know, but I love it. It's the whole, it's a literal lesson of, you know, living in the present. He is so in the present. And so, you know, when you were talking, I even had the sense of, you know, it allows you to forgive because he's not feeling guilt or shame or blame towards you either.
No.
And so
No. So
there's a place for constant forgiveness because there's nothing to hold on to.
Right.
I love it that he says he has no image to protect and no reputation to pr-
detect. And so that's one of the reasons it made it so easy for you to write this book, to put it out there. He had no qualms about what you were writing about.
No, and it's an interesting thing to pose, right? Like, a lot of people will say to me, I'm writing an essay about this now, about the art of candor, because a lot of people in reading the book will say, oh my God, you're so honest, or you went so out there. But then it makes me ask, why don't we do that? You know, what is it that we're so inhibited by? Are we really that afraid of being judged that we can't say who we are, or what's happening for us, or what has happened for us in the past? You know, it really poses these different kinds of questions to me, because he doesn't have a reputation to manage. It allows me to ask, well, why are you trying to circle around these issues instead of saying what's really true for me? And now, as a writer and a writing teacher, I also believe in keeping things private. So I'm not saying everything belongs to the public. But there is this possibility for being intimate in public that I think can address some of the violence, particularly in North America and in the United States.
That's a fascinating time. We're going to have to take a break now, but I love that, and we'll come back and talk more about that.
Sure.
Christina's Voices of Women. We'll be right back.
If you ever find yourself stuck in the middle of the sea, I'll sail the world.
Can you keep your lifestyle in retirement? It's a question people often wonder about. Ask Ameriprise financial advisor Jeff Packman about the new Confident Retirement Approach. You and Jeff can break down retirement planning step by step to get the real answers you need. Call Jeff Packman financial advisor today at 425-453-0272. Office is located at 601 108th Avenue Northeast, Suite 1800, Bellevue, Washington, 98004. The Confident Retirement Approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment and advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, member FINRA and SIPC.
You got attitude? Keys to the rescue. Adjust your attitude with Keys Clear Protein Waters. So refreshing. Just a few sips of Keys will give you a whole new outlook, thanks to 22 grams of the happiest protein on earth. Tongue-tingling tasty without the guilt of naughty or nasty ingredients. If that doesn't put a smile on your face, maybe you need to drink too. Put a little woohoo in your attitude with Keys Protein Water on Amazon or at Keys, K-E-E-S, please.com.
Sky Siegel co-hosts one of today's most popular psychic shows, Angels and Answers, with Artie Hoffman, as she communicates healing messages from the spirit world. These messages can be astounding, enlightening, and life-changing. Born with the God-given talent of inner guidance and the amazing ability to heal, Sky has healed thousands of people. Schedule a reading with Sky now. Call 908-500-1474 and visit skyofangels.com.
Called the Oprah of radio by her listeners, award-winning host Dr. Pat Basile is blowing the doors off of traditional talk radio. Get ready for an energizing delivery and powerful interviews with leaders in the field of human potential. Dr. Pat's fresh, new perspective on living life full out has catapulted her show to the top of talk radio. Tune in and Dr. Pat will help you thrive instead of merely survive. Visit thedrpatshow.com. That's thedrpatshow.com for listening times in your area.
Hi, I'm Leslie Fontaine with Sheer Alchemy on Transformation Talk Radio, and here's your tip of the day. What happens after we shift? An energetic shift can be disconcerting. When you shift from the known to the unknown, you literally are going into unknown territory without the former rules and constraints that held you in check. You feel happiness and joy, but you're nervous about not knowing what's next. Even happiness can be unfamiliar. You just don't have the guardrails. No one's telling you. It's dangerous. Stop. You'll get hurt. Plunge in. Leap. Taste it. Listen to your intuitive guidance. Let yourself step beyond the boundaries that you've known and challenge yourself to listen to your intuitive guidance, to your higher self, and learn what you were placed here to do. I'm Leslie Fontaine. Visit me at LeslieFontaine.com or call 678-665-3366.
I'm Chris Dana. So I'm talking with Sonia Lee. We're in Seattle, Washington, so I want to make that clear. And Sonia is doing some, you're doing some book tours. You're going to be in Banff in Canada, and you're also going to be, you know, this show also airs on the East Coast. You're going to be in the East Coast.
I'm going to be in Banff and Calgary. And, yeah, people can go to wonderingwhoyouare.com, and the current schedule is always going to be posted right there on the opening page that they get to on the homepage.
Okay, great. So we were talking about you know, having that candor and sharing your intimate stories and why that's important, and you were just explaining how you feel that that's even has to do with, and, you know, everybody worrying about being judged and so not really being authentic and really who we are, and how not doing that is contributing to the violence in the world, and that that could have an impact on how we are in the world.
I think so. And there's the grandmother understanding of what this is, and there's also scientific research now to support it, which, and people, authors like Colin McCann and others have been saying it for years, which is that one of the things that stories teach us is empathy. And I really feel like, particularly with personal writing, the more real that we can be, the more of our truth that we can share, even though we might be really scared about the people in our lives turning away from us, the better chance that we have of being seen by another. And when we're really seen by another person, we're in their heart. Even if that's a fictional character, you know, you think about how novels have changed us over the years. That is just the strength of the imagination. I now can imagine what that individual's life might be like. It's pretty hard to create an enemy out of that situation. It's pretty hard to, you know, go into somebody's town and pillage their resources when you know who they are. So I'm a huge fan for really trying to become more intimate in public. I know that when I go in and talk with soldiers and veterans, one of the things that happens is that if I'm vulnerable with them about the kinds of things that have gone on for me, then they can be vulnerable with me. There's a quality of trust that happens. It allows other people to tell their stories when we can just, you know, as the cliche goes, put our heart on our sleeve, but to really do it in a deep way, to do it in a way that doesn't live naively, oh, there's no consequences for doing this, but lives with the full awareness that there are consequences for people who speak the truth, as there has been throughout time, and I'm going to do it anyway. Do you know that?
And because it's true for you. I mean, you have to live with your consequences.
Yeah, I mean, it has been true for me. There's going to be people in our family life, in friends, casual acquaintances, who, you know, people that we've never met, strangers who are going to connect with this story, and people who are not going to connect with the story, people who don't want certain parts of it told and would have more comfort if it wasn't told in that way. I think that's all a part of the weave, because we're all different people. We're all unique beings here, you know, with different ideas of what it is that we're here to do. So, of course, what's private for one person is not going to be the same for another person. So, but clearly I think that my ideals are always going to be on the side of wanting to be intimate and vulnerable with people, just because I've seen what happens, the healing that happens in people's lives. I've seen it happen with Richard and I initially. I've seen it happen with our children, and then I've seen it happen with all the people that I teach. So you create this way, this kind of safety and protection in those kinds of groups. But now I feel like I have the strength and the wherewithal, the experience, and maybe a little bit of the crone-ness. Honestly, I don't think I could have done this as a younger woman, to go out there and say, I can hold this. I can say who I am, and screw it if it doesn't match up with other people's ideas of me.
Something there I think is very important is it's almost like
like a woman was, we have circles, and where you share, you create that safety. I mean, when you're with the veterans and people mm-hmm. with trauma, you mm-hmm. have to create that safety and sharing. Mm-hmm. But you've created it by being vulnerable, sharing your story, and being vulnerable allows, just what you said, allows others to be vulnerable and share too. So that, because you've created that safety net for them to speak freely there.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing too, Chris, is that I did it in service to an idea, which is that if you're a woman, particularly if you're a woman caregiver, you're only really given a couple of options. And that is, you can be a martyr, and you can give up all of your needs and live for whoever it is that you're taking care of, or you can walk away from the situation. The ideal that there is somebody who wants to have a big, wild adventure with a person that they're, you know, humbly taking care of isn't really talked about. And also, you know, because Richard lost his sexual history, there's a fair bit of our intimate life that is in the book. And it was important for me to include that because, first of all, we're in a marriage, and that's a huge part of what marriage is all about. But also because intimacy really needs to be talked about in terms of the truth of one's life. And so I really felt like it was an opportunity to bring all of this together in one story.
Yes, and you've done that so beautifully. And so bringing that back to Richard and your marriage and all that, you had to fall in love with a new person.
Yes. Yes, and, you know, the thing about that is that people think that the door would close on grief. I thought that. The door will close on the grief one day, and then I will be in love with the new man. But it wasn't really like that. It was like the circling around the grief ongoingly for years. And then there was kind of a big breath in there while I waited around to see if I was going to fall in love with the new man. One of the things that I could not do is write the book while I was dating and flirting and in that engagement stage with the new man, because it was dredging up so much for me that it was just being in constant pain from the writing. So I put it aside for, I think it was about 9 months to a year, while we were really engaged with each other and trying to figure out who each other was. And then when I really felt like we had a strong bond as a couple again, then I went to writing the book. And I think that was the only way that I could do it, both save my marriage and write the story.
Yes, and I think I've read somewhere that, you know, I mean, so many people in these situations, they don't make it in their marriages. You know, it's such a stress of having, you know, such a personality change and yeah. being able to deal with that. And so what do you think in you, how you were able to do that? What, there's some strength in you that the persistency, the tenacity to stick with it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you
know, people use the word in relationship to the story of devotion. And I, inside myself, I don't think of it as devotion because what it really was curiosity. I was so fascinated with how he thought, who he was, the way he behaved. It was so strange to me that I just was absolutely curious about who this man was, and I needed to hang out and see what was going to happen.
And that's, you know, and I love that because that's it's something that I teach in circle leadership, or when you have conflict, it's to come with curiosity. Well, it was great to talk with you today, Sonia.
Thanks for making the time for me.
Yeah, and so everybody, you can check out our website, wonderingwhoyouare.com. There's also a Facebook page with the same name.
Yes.
So this is Chris Stainis, and I'm the founder of Women of Wisdom Foundation, and I want to be sure everybody knows we still have a call for presenters at the 24th Annual Women of Wisdom Conference. Just our deadline is August 1st, but we do give extensions because we know it's summertime. If you need an extension, email us at wow, at womenofwisdom.org.
You've been listening to Voices of Women with Chris Stainis. Tune in each Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for Voices of Women Today, radio with Chris Stainis.